Yeah, good morning to everybody. All right, good morning to everybody. We're just about to start. About a minute.
Good morning.
How you doing, Carolyn?
Good morning.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning.
May I say something in the Jewish Times?
What's that?
May I say something about the Jewish Times?
Yeah, sure.
The article was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And let me just see, get the sound going in line, make sure. Continuing with chapter 8 in Kohelet, verse 9. And what we'll do, let's just quickly review. The theme that we're dealing with is, of course, we said it a couple of times, but it's always good, you know, when you have a week lapse between the classes just to get our heads back into it. Okay, Ryan, thanks a lot for the audio confirmation. So we talked in the beginning of chapter 8 how King Solomon is addressing that the wise person understands that there has to be an analysis of the universe that we encounter. It's not just surface information. There's a tremendous amount of depth and wisdom that the person uncovers. And when he does that, then he understands how to work with the universe and have a good life. He understands all the rules. So this way he's not locking horns with reality, but he's complying with reality, so everything in his life will go smoothly. And it'll also have an effect of illuminating him and removing his arrogance, because he's humbled by the great wisdom that's out there. He's humbled by the Creator. So those things which can cause, you know, that saying of fighting City Hall. So certainly when a person's going against reality, he will have constant frustration. And King Solomon says, again, we're at the beginning of 8, just so we have the flow, so you'll see how the next verse will fit in to the context. And he says, based on this, so King Solomon says that he himself guards God's commandments and also the oath, meaning that there's a punishments that will come, that the Jews took the oath at Sinai to accept the Torah, which means the positive commands and negative commands, and also to accept the punishments if they violate. And King Solomon continues in 8:3, where he says that a person shouldn't be arrogant to the point where he abandons and he leaves the presence of the king, and he stands in a lifestyle which is negative, because there he will suffer all the punishments. So that's one deterrent he uses in order to warn the person. Then he goes on in 4, that whatever the king has, he rules. Who's going to tell him what to do? Then you can't change, even though the person, and we said that King Solomon is saying all this because a person has a tendency to want to have that freedom, and that he wants to rebel. He just wants to do what instinctually feels good. But he warns the person again that whatever God had laid out, who's going to change that? You can't change reality. But he says, and then the positive, in verse 5, that a person who keeps the commands, in general, he will not have anything evil happening. And the wise person of heart, he knows that there's a time and place. So he doesn't make absolute assessments or say that something has to be all the time. So that's how, because he addresses that again, because the person will try to still have a last outpost for his rebelliousness. And even after all is said and done up to this point, he may say, well, listen, I see that sometimes this doesn't work out and that doesn't work out, even if you're keeping the system. So that's why he says the person who's intelligent will know that there's a time and place. Even certain commands, it may not be appropriate at a certain time, so you do it at another time. And he says that because that will be a line of defense that a rebellious person will say after he has nowhere else to turn and he realizes that he can't change what reality is. He understands that there is a system, that there are commandments, and that God set up the world a certain way. So that might frustrate the person, and he'll look for some last vestige of hope for his rebelliousness. And he'll say, well, look over here, even if I do a command at a certain time, it may backfire. Well, that's true, so you have to use your intelligence. That's why it's a person who is a wise-hearted person. He will understand that there's a time and a place for things. And he goes on in 6, and he reiterates the point, because for every desire, there's a time. But there are many evils that befall man. And even as I said, what are the many evils? Those many evils are the fact that man doesn't know when the timing is right. And that's what he goes on in 7 and 8. And he says, because man does not know when something will be, meaning when will the timing be appropriate for a certain endeavor. And even when it does happen that it is a good timing for it, who is going to tell him that it is a good time? Even that is something which is difficult to determine. So he moves on to 8, verse 8, and tells us that, again, and he's trying to show the person that things are not in your control. And what's the best example? Death. That's something which everybody is going to experience. People have a wrong idea about death. They think it's negative. But he's not using it now as a scare tactic. He's using it to show the person that if you could accept this, and that would be one of the hardest things to deny. So the person would accept that there's no ruling over death. So then he might have an opening to start accepting the rest of what he was saying up to this point. And he says when a person, he has no control of the death, or if he goes to battle, in terms of power, there's not going to be any control there. And even in terms of money, at the end of the verse, right? That's why the end of the verse says he will not, the resha doesn't mean evil, but as the commentators say, evil is in the end of verse 8 means money, meaning that which he hoarded in evil manners. Many times people go after money, and since that's their goal, morality is not their goal. So therefore, the money they accumulated can be called an evil. But that's what says the owner. He doesn't refer to the person as an Adam, as a man, or Ish, but now he uses the term Ba'alav, owner. Owner is indicative of possession. So that's why he ties it together, and he gives a hint in the very verse that money will not save a person either in terms of his day of death. That will not help him at all, because these are things that people hide behind. So, brick by brick, King Solomon is dismantling the feelings that people have that give them their false sense of security. And he tries to do that in order that he can expose the person's mind to what is real. And once a person sees that he's got nothing to hold on to, hopefully he will want to seize on to what's true when he sees everything is really false that he's been holding on to. Okay, now comes a new verse. So far, so good. Any questions? Okay. Now he moves on, and he says as follows. The first verse will be pretty straightforward. The second verse is very enigmatic, but I'll explain to you Ibn Ezra's. Actually, Ibn Ezra says that the second verse, meaning 10, he says many of the commentators erred in their explanation. So I'll tell you what he says. Let's just read 9 and 10 now. Right, so these are new verses. All this I have seen, and I have considered in my heart all of the actions that have taken place, that are done, that are performed under the sun. There's a time where one man will rule over another man to hurt him, to do evil to him. And so also, or similarly, I've seen wicked people that are buried. And if you read it literally, it just says, "Uvavo," and there come, "mim umimkom," and from the place. It's very hard if you just read it. Then it says, "Holy ones," or "holy," they will go, and they will be forgotten in the city. All right, they'll be forgotten in the city that there was done. And this is also futility. All right, difficult verse. What does he mean, according to Ibn Ezra? He means to say that the first verse, again, is straight. He says, all this I've seen and I've given to my heart, meaning I've considered it. What have I considered? All of the events that are performed under the sun. And one event that he isolates is this. He says there's a time, there's a singular time, that a man will rule over another man to injure him. And also, now I'll read the verse as Ibn Ezra says. And also I have seen that there are wicked people that are buried peacefully. They go to the grave without any type of problem. Very, very smooth. Their life ends very peacefully. And then there come their children in their place. So the word mimko means that they fill, the children actually fill the place of the parent. The evil that the parents did, these wicked people that were buried peacefully, the children come and follow the ways and they continue. I see that, he says. And then he also says, I see something else. Kadosh, the holy, I mean the righteous people, they go, they leave the earth, and they are forgotten in the city in which they performed all their good. And this is also a futility. So now he's contrasting what seems to be a problem, the question on the whole philosophy. The good that seems to happen to the wicked, and they die peacefully, and then even the children continue in their ways. But then in the contrast, you have people that are righteous, and they leave, and they're forgotten. Why are they forgotten? So I'll read you to Ibn Ezra, because he says as follows. He says, and the matter, after he rebukes the other commentators, all right, he says, I've seen wicked people that rule over man, and they do bad things to them. And they die, these wicked people die without any type of affliction in their life. They have great, luxurious lives. They are buried in their burial spots. As the matter states, that they have no chains to their death. There's no restriction. It seems to be like a very peaceful transition from their life, which was had no afflictions at all, and they have a peaceful death. Like they die without sickness, and they, he says this is, Ibn Ezra has explained the words of the verse. And then there comes to the world a second generation. What does it mean? That the children come, and they stay in the place of their, they fill the places of the wicked parents. And their, even their memory remains. But then he contrasts, and Ibn Ezra says, but then you have the event where you have the righteous people, that they leave. And they have no children, and they are forgotten in the very city in which they lived. And all which they did. Meaning they are lost, and so is all their righteous actions. And there's no children that fill the places. And these are the people that did the truth. For example, and he just cites the daughters of Tzalafchad, that they just saying that they spoke well, meaning that people that speak truth. So now Ibn Ezra continues. He says it's a wonderment. It's a questionable thing. How can there be a cutoff of the remembrance of the righteous people, and all of their good is gone that they have done? And in contrast, the wicked person dies in peace, and he leaves children in his place. And Ibn Ezra concludes, and he says, this is also a futility. What's the futility? What is he saying the futility is here? And also, what is the transition from the previous, what we did last week, and what is King Solomon doing now? He says, all this I have seen, and I have given my heart to consider all the actions that are performed under the sun. We haven't seen that in a while. Under the sun, remember? What did you say that means? And then he says, there's a time, a singular time, that a person will rule over somebody else to do evil to him. And he adds to the problem, seems to be, you know, ostensibly. And even I see wicked people, that they die peacefully, and they have children that they leave over, and their memory is recalled, and they fill the parents' place. And in contrast to that, the righteous people don't have children, and all their good and their fame is lost and forgotten forever. And he says this too is a futility.
Rabbi, is he trying to say that
because typically you might read the verse and you might say, what does he mean it's a futility? Meaning, the event is futile. It's worthless. Why even be good? Look, the wicked people live peacefully. They have children. The righteous people, you have events where they have no children. They die and they're forgotten. So a person might say the futility is in being righteous. But it's not. It's like you're saying, Doug. Exactly. That the futility is that very question. Again, you know, we have to keep in mind, who was King Solomon? At 12 years old, he was miraculously, God had a vision. He gave to him and asked him, what shall I give you? And King Solomon asked for knowledge. Even at that young age, before he was given the gift of miraculous knowledge, he sought knowledge. And evidently, having come from those years of being trained by his father, King David, no wonder he was already on the road to a life of wisdom. But then God miraculously gave him knowledge overnight. So now when he's writing, we have to say, you know, we have to appreciate who we're reading over here. So it's good. And this fits in, like Doug is saying, this fits in with everything we've said up to this point, that when he says it's futile, pretty much all the times in the past when we had this, it was a comment that King Solomon was making about the very observation. What we said is the approach that King Solomon uses is that he vocalizes the opinions, the false opinions of the masses in order to get them to identify and to agree that they have those opinions. Sometimes an opinion a person doesn't know he really has. He's holding on to all this time until somebody vocalizes it. And when he hears it, yeah, I agree with it. Now once it's out in the open, so the king can then show the problems with that opinion. So that's what he means over here. That the if you read the verse, even in verse 9, he says, all this I have seen, because what's going on in terms of the transition? Up to this point, see, what are the words? You have to look for the words in the verse. He says, all this I have seen. What does he mean, seen? And I've given my heart to ponder it. What does he mean by that? To all of the events that were done under the sun, right? That also is a new idea. Then he says another, fourth thing, there's a time that a man will rule over to somebody else to do evil to him. So he says that, well, let's just, I'd like you to work on it too, so I don't want to give too much away. Let's just, you know, finish off on Doug's point, that in 10, when he says that the wicked have it great, and the righteous seem to be no kids, and they're forgotten, nobody remembers all the good they did. It's just like Doug said, that really that's a futility. Why is it a futility? Because it doesn't matter. That's an opinion of somebody who assesses the value of life based on just the limited range of existence on earth. If a person will assess the limited range of existence that a person has on earth, and that's it, then this could make sense. If we just isolate from birth until death, and let's see what happens, well, the wicked seems to be having something good, and the righteous aren't. But if we put it into the context that the person doesn't is not even around after death on earth, so the fact that he's not remembered has no effect on him. He's not on earth anymore. And the real existence of a person is his soul that exists after death. That's really what is of any concern to a person. So a person makes, people make a mistake. The masses make a huge blunder, a huge mistake. When they say, look, how the wicked, they die peacefully and they have children after them. But they're dead. They don't know about the children after them. That doesn't affect them anymore. They're completely disconnected from their earthly existence. So you can't say that that's a good, that that's a praise. It's a trick of the mind that since we're here, we imagine that the dead are also just as much involved in this world as we are. So they're looking down, they're getting, you know, pleasure from the fact that they see the children, and this is something that the wicked people are getting. I mean, that could be a question of justice. But that's a futile thing. It's futile because it doesn't do anything for you. It doesn't do anything for you. The fact that how you died was peaceful. It was an easy death without any type of sickness. Just the opposite could be better for you. If a person has sickness before he dies, and he has time to contemplate his life and see his flaws and repent before he dies. If you die suddenly without any warning, that's an evil. It's just the opposite. But people don't look at it that way. And the person having the idea, oh, it's such a sad thing that their memory of the righteous is lost and he has no son to live after him, that doesn't matter. If he was righteous, his soul is perfected. So King Solomon is saying the futility is that question. That type of a statement is a futility.
Rabbi?
Yes. Good question. Very good question.
Everything seems to be focused on this life right now.
Right. All right. So the answer is that if a person would be presented with the world to come, what happened is that would obscure his attention towards wisdom. And he would end up having neither this world nor the next world. What the world to come is what the Rambam, Maimonides talks about, and what the righteous look forward to was the continuation of that state where they're involved in wisdom. So it wasn't a new thing. To them, they viewed wisdom as something very enjoyable. So they had to be, so the Torah does not shift the focus. The Torah's focus is on wisdom because that's what gives the person the greatest enjoyment. If a person is given the carrot on the stick of the world to come, so then he'll just be going through the motions of wisdom because he's imagining something else that's going to happen. So he ends up not spending time in just wisdom per se as an ends in itself. He now will just go through the actions, do the commandments, but he will never focus himself solely on wisdom for wisdom's sake to see that that's really the reality because he thinks there's something greater awaiting him. So the Torah purposely obscures. It mentions it in allusions because it is a reality. A person has to know that his life here is not everything. That's important. That's essential. But it does it in a way where the focus is always on the ideas and the person can really come to enjoy this life And he'll have the best life here because he's engaging in something which really draws all of his energies and it captivates his mind. And bodily involvements get tired, and there's a limit to the energy that the body can expend in any given area. But in terms of wisdom, that is something which a person can be intensely involved. You look at a child, you know, you can see children how intense they can be involved in a new gift or an involvement. So they haven't yet sublimated their energies in terms of having to be two-faced and how to deal with people in society and dealing with politics and diplomacy and all these different things that go on that cause a person to have his energy divided. A child is an example of one who's got his energies purely going, 100% of his energies so intensely involved in what they're engaged in that moment. That's really the state of a chacham, a wise person, where he is now basically acting like a child in that he has energy completely engaged. Maybe that's why the forms of the cherubim on the ark, which house the law, which they house, they're connected intimately with knowledge. So you have faces of children on there. Maybe it's for that reason. Maybe that's one of the reasons. Because children embody the concept of being 100% absorbed in an engagement, in a pursuit. So in order that we are not misled. So the Torah does not put a focus. The spotlight is on wisdom, on the numerous commands, and we're engaged throughout the day that we should be focused. What's an idea behind this command? What's the idea behind that command? Since throughout our day and the week and the months and the year, we are constantly looking forward to the next holiday, the next activity. I have to pray this afternoon. I have to put tefillin on tomorrow morning. So all of these events that take place, or the prayers on this food or that, or visiting the sick, or whatever the action is, we are constantly being guided. So we ponder, what's the idea behind this? And this captures our attention in terms of action, but then we start thinking into the ideas behind it. And this engages us day after day, year after year, to the point that our whole life was immersed in understanding just the concepts of the Torah. And it ends up, because of this type of a regulation of our activity, of our attention, that our minds appreciate wisdom. And we're not imagining what this Olam Haba. Yes, we come to it time after time. Infrequently, it comes back up, and we think about it, like now, what is it? So there's a balance, of course. But it's there just to let us know the fact that this is just the beginning of our existence. The real existence is after the earth. But you can't have the focus be the next world, because then people are just going to be mesmerized by what is that thing, and they won't be involved in the day-to-day study and seeing the wisdom and science and engaging themselves that way. So that's why there has to be a balance, Doug. All right, you see how it works?
Yeah, I hear it. Thank you.
Yeah, I see, because there's a, you know, it is an ultimate state that we look at here, and wow, what's going to happen there? It really, if you spend time on it, it could really just, you know, you can get absorbed into what is going to be there. It's such a, you know, you're amazed by what's it going to be like there. But that can have such a pull on a person. So we have to be regulated in the other direction, towards what is really, because only by having the wisdom and by engaging it, see, that's an important point. I forgot, this is the main point of the answer, is that by following the steps and the guideline of the Torah system, studying the universe, and being engaged in wisdom, so then we actually are involved in what can sustain the soul in the next world. So in order to have the next world is sort of like it sounds like a contradiction. In order to have the next world, we have to be focusing on this world, meaning the wisdom that we see here. Only by that does the soul gain eternal life, because it's engaged and it's partaking of things which are eternal themselves, meaning knowledge, ideas. So when the soul is partaking of that and it enjoys that, so that's what God said will grant that soul a continued existence even after the body's gone. So that attachment to wisdom is really what is the gives the person entry to the next world. If he doesn't attach himself to wisdom, so there's nothing that he can enjoy in the next world. The soul will have nothing to sustain it. So the righteous, the tzaddikim, the wise men, they looked at that situation as being free from any type of distraction. That situation of the next world would be a greater amount of wisdom, a higher level, and something more intensely enjoyable, but without any of the distractions of sleeping and eating and tired and the physical ailment, any oppression. So this is why they anticipated it. Not because it was some imagined good that they didn't know what it was. No. That's a foolish thing. Okay. So now we see verse 10. We see that this is really a foolish thing. But let's go back to 9. We didn't explain that yet. What was the transition? If you look at the words in 9, he says as follows. He says, "It's kol zeh ra'isi, all this I have seen." Now all of a sudden, what King Solomon is doing by saying seen and under the sun and all the actions that I've seen under the sun, now he's moving to the sphere of the practical. Up to this point, he was giving us theory. He was telling us the theoretics behind the wise person's life and that God is in control and there's nothing you could do, meaning these are the rules. These are the principles he was focusing on up to this point. So he laid down all these beautiful principles that hopefully will get a person to abandon his arrogance and will be able to stop fighting and submit to the system that God created for his own good. And then King Solomon then moves into verse 9, and he says, "All this I've seen, I've considered in my heart." And I think many times he says he considers in his heart because he's removing himself from just the moment. Most people will assess something based on just the momentary considerations. And that's why they'll say, "Oh, look at this right now." And they'll say there's a problem with the system because of what they see right now. But King Solomon doesn't know. "I pondered in my heart, then I looked at the whole purview. Lekol ma'aseh, all of the actions." You see, that's important. Everything which takes place. I'm not just assessing a human existence based on a momentary, a myopic view of what's going on today, or this week, or even this year. He takes all of existence into consideration. And then he says, meaning things that take place under the sun. He says under the sun to let you know that this is now going to be the considerations of a person who's foolish, where he only assesses the human existence based on the earthly portion. Under the sun, which means why you're on earth. Now, if you do that, then you'll see there'll be a time. But even so, it's only a time. It's not many times. He says there's a time where a man will rule over somebody else to try to do him evil. He tries to do him evil, but in fact, you can't do evil to a person who's living the right life. There may be some times when you go through some physical pain or so on. In terms of your absolute good, if you value wisdom and you value God, the Torah system, a person can't touch that. But a person who's living with incorrect considerations, that he's just looking at what's happening under the sun, quote unquote, so then he brings this up as an argument. And that's why he goes on to verse 10, and he says, and another argument people have is they'll look at the day, the peaceful deaths that the wicked people go through, and they have children who live after them and following those evil ways. Look how great they have it. And the righteous people, in contrast, they have no children, they died, all the good they did is forgotten. So that he's ridiculing it now. Because since he just told you all the principles, the past few weeks we were concentrating on the principles, the true principles, then King Solomon knows he has to still answer the concerns that people have about the practical. Yes, his principles are laid down. But I know that the nations and the masses that read my words, they will come back to me and they'll retort with, well, look at these examples in certain cases. So that's what he's doing now. He moves to the practical. That's why he says, all this I've seen. Meaning seen is an event. And he says, something which I place my heart under, I incline my heart to, which means I look at the entire scope of events. The beginning of the world till now, I don't just look at isolated cases. And that's why he says under the sun, to let you know that people are asking from a very small portion of human existence, which means the earthly portion, the under the sun portion. And yes, there will be a time, but you can't make a rule based on a singular incident and say, and also try to make a rule that the Torah is no good because something happened under the sun. So he's critiquing the person for that, and he also the critiquing of the person where they say the end of the life, the wicked have it great, and the righteous aren't remembered, and they have no children, and all the good they did was lost. He says those two things, those are compute futilities. You see what he did is that, I want to show you that up to this point, up to 9 and 10, he was giving you principles, and he was laying down the principles, but then he knew that people would ask from the practical, so therefore he addresses the practical in these two verses. He does continue on that. He says in 11, he says, well, he just gives a little bit more insight to us, and he says, why is it that people do this evil? So you'll take a look at verse 11, he says, because Asher ain't nasif hiskum, because the event, the matter of the evil actions don't come so fast. Therefore, a person fills his heart. People, b'nei adam, the sons of man, fill their heart to do evil. What does he mean? That the matter of evil doesn't come fast? So the commentators say, he says, what causes a person to stumble and to live this way and to go into the evil? He gives us an additional point. Because Ibn Ezra says again, and he says as follows, on account of the fact that there is not done the matter of revenge and the payment for the evil the person does, since it doesn't happen quickly, meaning it happens in the next world, or it could be at the end of the person's life, but since a person doesn't see any real recompense to his evil ways now or suddenly or in any, you know, with any really close proximity to his evil, so he's convinced there's nothing wrong with it. Therefore, he fills his heart. The heart of men are filled to desire in their soul to do evil, because the fear is removed from them, Ibn Ezra says. Separate insight over there, but still, you know, still attached to the theme. And you see also because it's attached to this world. It's still rooted. It doesn't happen now. So if it doesn't happen now, that's it. Since it doesn't happen now, since my punishment doesn't happen now, so now I assess the values of things based on the current events. And the current events show that I can live evil, and I can have a great life, and I get away with everything. So I'm just isolating the current events, and this gives me my conviction that I can live this way, and I don't have to pay the price. Again, because a person looks at just the momentary. Whereas King Solomon, you know, he pondered in his heart. Pondering in your heart means that you removed yourself from just the current considerations, the current events. From this moment in time, he removed himself and he looks at the principles and he looks at the whole scope of existence. That's how you really get a true picture of how to assess whether something's good or whether something's evil. Okay, let me see if there's any questions or comments. Let me pause here.
We're good here.
Right, you see the whole structure of this this parak, this chapter is just beautiful. Not that the others aren't. I'm just saying we're within this chapter now. We're spending a few months on this chapter so far, but we see how it's unfolding and the design and all the nuances in the verse. What gets me every time is when I see him say those words, this is also futility. As if he's like, you know, it sounds like, that's what the rabbi said, that they wanted to hide this book. They wanted to store it away because it sounded like it was, deprecating the Torah lifestyle. Meaning, what good is the Torah? You know, the wicked people live great, they die peacefully, they have children, and the righteous person, he dies without kids and nobody remembers his good. So that sounds like a ridicule of the Torah life. They eventually said that they didn't store it away because he concludes on the a clear, right, you know, correct note. A person should follow the Torah. This is all of man, to follow the mitzvahs. So since that's the summation, so that's why they didn't store it away and they kept the book in, you know, circulation. They kept this work, you know, Koheles, in circulation. But you see, if you look into it, you see that it's really not. Of course, King Solomon is not talking negatively against the Torah. But he's using a method of bringing out a person's notions that maybe are unconscious or subconscious or obscured by his concerns of the world and his pursuits and his needs and his family. So he vocalizes main themes that people will awaken to and say, yeah, I do agree with that. I do agree with that critique on the Torah lifestyle. He brings it out only to show them that they're wrong. But he can't show them wrong unless he shows them that they actually have this false view. So once he exposes it and he gets people to admit that they do harbor these feelings, then he shows them no, that's futile. That type of concern is futile. Then it's up to you to figure out what's the futility. So it's like you said, Doug. This thing really doesn't matter. The fact that you're not remembered is not going to affect you at all in terms of the next world. Your true existence, which is not here, is not affected at all by these petty concerns of the earthbound existence. All right, it's clear?
Yep.
Yeah, so those that verse, verse 9 is really very, very important that you stop and you see what he's... I mean, like Rambam says, sometimes you have a number of verses just giving one idea, and sometimes you could have one verse giving numerous ideas. So I think this verse... 9 is an example of the latter, where you see, he says, all this I have seen to hint to us that is now talking not about the principle anymore, but about practical, what takes place. And that I gave my heart to consider it. I didn't just assess momentary considerations, but of all of the matters under the sun, all of the events. You see that he says all. And he says under the sun, to let you know he's talking about the earthly existence. And then he also says, there's a time. Yes, there is a time there. Meaning to say, it's still the minute cases where there's going to be questions. But you see the people who do live the life of the Torah, that they are completely immersed in it, and they enjoy it. And, of course, if a person's living intelligently, they're going to be complying with reality, and life is going to be much more easy with them. They're going to be able to look at the results of their actions before they jump in, like, it says in Ethics to the Fathers, who's a wise man? One who knows the outcome of his actions. A lot of people, however, they just see something, they jump in, and they don't think, what's going to happen 2 months down the road if I make, X, Y, and Z move? So, of course, a person who's living intelligently is going to be complying with how the world operates. And on top of that, he's going to benefit from God's providence. And as much as a person's living properly and is in control of his passions and is following God, so God continues to help him to have a lifestyle where he can continue and pursue that. And even though there's isolated cases where we don't have answers to, we don't say that that now punches a hole in all the good that happened in all previous cases. It's true, we don't have all the answers. All right. Okay, so maybe we'll wrap up. If there's any other questions, other points, we have a few more minutes. So if you have something else that you'd like to raise, and if we have the time, I'm happy to try to address it if possible.
Rabbi, can I ask a question?
Yes.
What Doug had directed to the son is excellent, because it doesn't matter if we're rich or poor. What color skin we have, we all end up the same place. Everybody is here for the length of time that God says, and then we have to leave when he says. But in the meantime, people find the excuse that, want to make my life better, so it's okay to be involved in some kind of a situation where I can extort money from somebody, or it's okay to be involved in a situation where I use improper weights and measures, and so on. While I'm alive, I have to make my life the best I can, because the end, we all have the same ending, but I want want to have all these things. I don't care what happens after I die. They could say I was good or they could say I was bad, because whatever they say, I'm going to the same place. How do you explain that to a person?
They're not going to the same place. The person's not engaged in wisdom, so he's not going anywhere. His soul will expire.
But according to him, his soul will expire, and he's going to be dead. He doesn't believe that there is a soul.
Then he's willing to forfeit the greatest good. So that person is willing to forfeit the greatest good. So if he just can't accept it, it's a loss, but that's it. He will be forfeiting the greatest good because he's denying what's true.
Because the afterlife is really what counts.
No, I'm just saying, your question was that a person will just say that I don't believe that there's anything else going to happen. I'm going to die like everybody else. And King Solomon actually takes it up in the next verse. He says, in 14, that there's a futility which is done under the sun, or performed in the sun, that there are righteous people that reaches them, just like the events of the wicked. And there are wicked that what they enjoy is just like the events of the righteous. And he says, no, this is also futility. So there's another verse also which says it more clear, that people will say that, the death of the righteous is just like the death of the wicked. People die and that's it. So if a person will ignore any fact, of course he's going to hurt himself. Person wants to do that. He could. Person wants to say, listen, there's no cliff in front of me. I'm going to just keep driving with my eyes closed. So he can do what he wants. But reality will, take its course.
Rabbi, I was just curious. Is there any, either in what we're learning now or other sefer that discusses more in depth the differences of these things?
What do you mean, these things?
About wisdom, attaining wisdom, or not attaining as much wisdom, or the reward in the afterlife, anything to that effect that elaborates more of the afterlife and wisdom and the details of it.
Yeah, there's more in this book before prior to the point that we're in, and afterwards in here he goes into it more, and he talks about the distinctions. Earlier we said that wisdom is like a light, and like the people who don't have wisdom is like they're walking in darkness. So there's much more that we've covered already and that we will cover, and also it talks about in the tractate Sanhedrin. So there's more, and then there's also the works of the philosophers like Maimonides, and he talks about at the end of the Book of Kings. You can look there where he talks about the
No,
that's clear. My mind is there. It talks about what the goodness is that the righteous are looking forward to in the next world. There he goes, and he elaborates. So there's definitely more sources on it. Again, it's not the focus, like Doug's question before.
Right.
But even the non-Jewish philosophers recognize the fact that the soul is something which is not physical. And, death is a physical event. So death does not affect anything except the physical component of man. Now, man is not a rock. Man has the ability to perceive himself and ponder ideas of justice and God. So these things have to be, he can only have a relationship to that if there's a component of his being, not his physical being, but there's a component of man's existence that's not physical. You can only partake of metaphysical ideas if you have some sort of an apparatus that can, tap into that world of wisdom. So that part of man doesn't die if he sustains it. And he can also have a tremendous life here, no matter what point in life he starts. Look at Rabbi Akiva. He didn't start until he was like 40. And before that, he was very anti-Semitic. Yeah, he said, give me a tomahawk, give me a wise man, and I'll bite him like a donkey. Because the donkey, when he bites through the bone. He had such an animosity towards him. But then when he saw the truth and he saw the wisdom of the Torah, it just changed his life around. He became one of the greatest rabbis that we ever saw. And he, again, starting, midway through life. And he just had tremendous enjoyment. And that's something which, after he died, of course, his soul will continue. than to be on an even higher plane.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just curious if there was, you know, specifics from that really go into the details and elaborate on afterlife, you know, as much as we should. I know you're not supposed to detail on it and dwell on it.
Well, you can't. It's not a matter of not supposed to. It's that we can't. We don't know. The verse and the prophet says that no eye has seen it except for God alone. I mean, nobody here, you know, is, nobody here has ever gone there and come back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something we really have it, but, you know, we have the words of Moses where he tells the people to choose life. So what is he doing when he's telling the people to choose life? And he's giving them the Torah. So they are alive already. He says, behold, I place before you Zechayim v'yeserah tov v'yeserah v'yesamavas. I'm putting before you today life and goodness and death and evil. So he says, pick life. Now, if you pick death, it doesn't mean you're going to drop dead on the spot. That means that you're picking a life without Torah. That means that your soul will not have any continued existence. You know, so there's places that we can go through. I can, you know, think about more. I'll try to get back to you on that. If there's more specific sources you can, I can direct you to.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. But definitely, if you get your hands on the Maimonides, his Mishnah Torah in Laws of Kings at the very end, I think chapters at 10 and 11, it goes through about, he goes more in about the what the righteous are looking forward to in the next world. So you can start with that.
Mishnah Torah, okay. That's a good source.
Yep. That's an amazing work.
Well, thank you very much for your answer.
My pleasure.
And for this year, and for the other information that you gave me during the week about that other question I had. That was very informative.
Thank you. Okay. All right, so I guess we'll wrap up here unless there's any other questions.
I think we're okay here. Thanks very much, Rabbi.
Okay. All right, so good
Thank
week to everybody.
Rabbi.
All right.
Well,
a good week to everybody, and we'll pick up next Sunday, and we'll move forward. So we'll go again. We'll continue with, we just touched on verse 11, so we'll go into it more in depth. So chapter 8, verse 11, and maybe we'll do 12. We'll take a look. All right, so you can look those over, and we'll pick up next week, same time.
Great.
Thanks.
Okay, good week, everybody.